Welcome to the Wonder What podcast. I'm Robbie Woodrum.
And I'm Rob Woodrum.
And this is where we talk about Eastgate stuff and some other stuff, too.
A variety of topics. Hopefully you're not driving as you're listening to this, because that could be dangerous. I have an effect on people that usually puts them to sleep. I see it pretty regularly. So we're here to waste at least 60 minutes of your life as we discuss a variety of things. What are we going to talk about today, Robbie?
Oh, I was just going to say welcome.
Oh, welcome.
Well, we were going to talk about, first of all, anything at Eastgate that's coming up, events that are forthwith.
Forthwith.
Yes.
That actually makes us sound far more something than we are.
Not smart.
Pretentious, maybe.
That's it. Exactly. Last month when we talked about Eastgate News, we talked about Surf and Grill, and we just had crazy things happen last month with Surf and Grill.
I'll tell you what, everything was conspiring against us for Surf and Grill this year. First of all, we had to cancel because it was storming the day that we were going to, our first date that we had. So we thought, well, no problem. We'll just move it back by a week. But what did moving it back by a week do?
Well, we weren't sure at first, but about Wednesday or Thursday, we kind of went, oh no, that's Memorial Day weekend that we moved it to. And we'd already told everybody, hey, we're not going to cancel. We're just going to move it back 1 week. So it was kind of too late to change things, and we kept telling ourselves, it'll probably be okay, because Monday's usually the crazy day at the beach is here.
We were wrong. I never go down there. Do you ever go down there? Always with me.
So. Yeah, that's right. Well, I mean, just as locals, you pretty much know when to avoid certain areas. Yeah. And Memorial Day weekend, you just don't go to the beach. You stay in your backyard.
I can't think of the last time I've been down on the beach on a major holiday at all.
I know. Even 4th of July, we rarely venture out of the house. We just kind of stand
hunker
in the backyard
and
watch the fireworks from there. It's just too much traffic.
Mostly listen to the fireworks and watch the sky light up.
That's right. Or watch the shows on TV about what's going on.
Yeah, watch them on TV.
We've even watched the ball drop at Pier Park from home.
That's true. Yeah. We have.
We talk about going out there.
That's what kind of party animals we are.
That's right. But the traffic is ridiculous. And so most of us try to avoid that.
Yes.
But anyway, so that's what happened. So that's two surfing grills in a row that didn't work.
So, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, we did end up, the guys had already cooked most of the burgers. They got there early enough on Sunday, and we started getting messages from them saying, hey, there's word they might close the park because it's full. So there was like no parking places left or anything like that. So basically, we were just gearing up to like close up shop really quickly after second service and run down there.
And it was not to be. And we've got new volunteers that are working Surf and Grill, kind of replacing Blake as he's transitioning out of that, Blake Roseman. So Joe Wazinski and Steve Hendricks, those guys have gone down there and done an amazing job of apparently getting they were able to get a pavilion down there.
Yeah, they left earlier. They left probably.
Hopefully no violence was involved.
Yeah, as far as we know, everything went smoothly on that,
but nobody could get in the park.
Yeah, they were the only ones that made it in.
That was a lot of burgers for two guys to eat.
It was. And so we got a message before the teaching was over second service that the park had been closed, and so we couldn't even go down there. So basically, the guys just packed up all the food and brought it back to Eastgate, and
everybody
we ate
just
there.
Hung out.
Yeah, so that was fun.
A bunch of people hung out, and we ate burgers, and that actually was fun. It was okay.
We just didn't get any baptism done.
Baptizing
done. And the one, there was only one person that was going to get baptized, and so we'd already rescheduled
her. It's a young lady who was going to get baptized last year at Surf and Grill, and I forget exactly what the circumstances were, but she wasn't going to be able to make it on the last one. So we said, well, all right, we'll put it off and we'll make sure you get into the first one. And of course, the first one came around and got rained out. And so I said, well, we'll do it the next week. And of course, this happened. So she's been really waiting. She's been very patient, very sweet about it.
Very nice. Said, well, we're going to try again next month. And then June is looking to be a pretty busy month for both of us. So we're already kind of backed off Surf and Grill to the last Sunday of the month. So usually it's the third, but we had to change it.
Because that's Father's Day. Mm-hmm. And so some people have asked if we could not do it on Father's Day. Traditionally, we always have, but I think it's better not to. But I'm going to be teaching at a youth retreat that week. And I was going to be on the week that we're going to be doing Surf and Grill, the last yes. week. I was going to be absent that day, but then realized that, you know, there was a lot of absences from Sunday morning. So I talked with the youth pastor who's bringing his group down from Georgia and let him know that I had a little bit of a scheduling conflict. So it turns out he's going to bring his whole youth group to Eastgate that morning, and then I'll be able to teach that morning, and then we'll go out and do Surf and Grill, and then I'll go and teach the final thing at the youth retreat. So it should be fun.
Yeah.
So I should do a painting for them. I'm planning on doing a painting for them. That'll be fun.
Yeah. Yeah. They're great kids.
They are. They really are.
So the other stuff that's coming up, because it's summer, of course, both youth groups, our middle school and our high school group, do go on trips. And so they need to do a lot of fundraising so that there's less burden on the families to raise the funds that they need for their trips. The middle school has one group and the high school, one trip, and the high school group has another. So one of the first fundraisers is coming up June 20th, and it's going to be a spaghetti dinner with a talent show with the youth group. And they did something like that last year too. And it was amazing. I couldn't believe how talented these kids are.
Those guys are amazing.
Yeah. And they're fearless. They're just all getting up there on the stage, and I'm hiding back in the media room and thinking, please, nobody ever call me up there ever for any reason. But they're great, and they're very talented, and they're funny, and they just put their heart and soul into it. And so,
of course, we're really building this up. We're making it to where they got a lot.
This was last year, so who knows?
Last year's youth group. These guys could be deadbeats.
That's right. That's right. We don't really know what they're going to be doing, but last year was good. So
I'm sure it's going to be awesome. And there's going to be spaghetti either way, which is, of course, the most divine. It's what we'll certainly be eating in heaven.
That's what some people think. Yes.
That's just Bible. Sorry. And science.
Well, no matter what, we always want to encourage everybody to support the youth. They bring so much energy into the room, and we just always have had such a heart for them.
That's the thing. We don't ever want to even create a mindset of, there's the adult church and there's the youth church, because we're all part of the same community. And this
Absolutely.
Is our future. The young people are our future. That's one of the things that Eastgate, we've prioritized that from the time we started back in the Promenade Mall. There's a history of Eastgate that I can tell you about that you may not be aware of. Eastgate used to host a coffee house back in the 90s. Pretty much about a year or so after we started doing a coffee house every Friday night. We were open from 7 to 11. And we called it Javaluya, which is embarrassing to me now. You don't seem to be embarrassed by that, but I'm embarrassed by it. But it was the 90s, and it made sense at the moment. Javaluya.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun doing it. Our kids were pretty little then.
Yeah,
I'm thinking like 8, 9, 10, 11, something like that.
A little older than that, maybe.
A little bit older. This sounds really terrible, but we left them at home.
Yeah, don't tell them that.
Okay. Forget that part.
Forget that. No, leave your children at home.
Edit that part out later, Rob. But you and I would go down there every Friday night at 5 or 6 o'clock and
get the thing set up, get the sound system.
That's how you learned probably to learn how to run sound. That's how
most
you learned.
Most of it was learned.
That's how I learned how to make coffee. I and cappuccinos and frappuccinos and all those crazy things that the kids wanted. And we didn't charge for anything. But then these kids would bring in their local bands, and so there would be music.
I mean, there really wasn't a whole lot. I don't know if there is now, but there wasn't at the time a whole lot for young people to be able to do in this town, and especially something that was a place that was a safe environment. We weren't necessarily heavy-handed on trying to evangelize the kids, though the bands were mostly Christian bands from the local hardcore scene. So mm-hmm. they would come in and, oh man, they'd get the mosh pits going. And I was way too old at that time to be doing that. I couldn't even imagine doing that now.
And you're in your early 30s. But I remember too that the floor was ceramic tile in most places, and the AC just could not keep up.
Oh,
and I remember
gosh.
Because of the moisture, the humidity that built up in there, you just slide across those tiles. It was really...
It was intense.
Yeah, I was worried about the safety a few times, but...
See, I was still too young to worry about that sort of stuff. That thing... But, man, remember some of the bands? The Spikes Balloon Machine,
yeah.
Remember them?
Mm-hmm.
Five Smooth Stones, that
yeah,
one band.
That's right.
Aaron Rios was in Area 51.
Yeah.
And also, wasn't he also in Dr. Jezuska?
Yes, I think so.
Which was a ska band.
Yes.
Remember the whole ska thing that was going on?
Wasn't
that
it was Area 52? Is Area
51? No, Area 51. Oh. Area 51. It was a whole alien thing.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Got my numbers mixed up there. There was some really, really talented
Embrace.
People.
Wasn't that the name of the one band?
Right.
The Screamo band?
It's Embrace. All coming back to you.
Oh, man. See, those are fun times. I remember
they
that.
Were.
And I know that there's some Dale Stidham, who is one of the worship pastors at Eastgate, talks very fondly of those days of having that. And it was a lot of fun. I wish we could recreate that, but I'm entirely too old now.
Yeah. Eventually, actually, we did it for so long that Jessica, our oldest daughter, came to manage it.
That's true.
It started in the Promenade Mall, and then it moved to the Beachwalk Center. So, I mean, we did it for quite a while.
We changed the name from Javaluya
to the corner Coffee House. Yeah.
Right, when we moved over there in 2000.
Yeah. We grew up, and we got a little smarter. Yeah.
That's when Jessica took over. Embraced played there on a pretty regular basis. Mm-hmm. People, not Embraced. Well, Embraced did play there, but Forever Changed. I'm pretty sure those are the ones that everybody would always come out to,
to listen to. Yeah, they
draw the big
crowds.
They're from Tallahassee.
Mm-hmm.
That was a lot of fun. I remember back in the old Javaluya days, I can still remember one time, those kids would come in and they had, you know, they were so proud of those Marshall amps that they had, and they would crank them up to 11. And I had this tiny little powered mixer that I'm trying to keep up with. Everybody's screaming, I can't hear the vocals. You know, like anybody could understand what was being said. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I had those old speakers, those hand-me-down speakers, and I pushed that thing so hard that it literally, you remember that night where it started smoking?
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Oh, that was fun.
I just remember the quirky little things some of the bands would do too. One band would, I guess they were trying not to like bring glory to themselves. And so they would turn around.
Oh, Cool Hand Luke.
Cool Hand Luke.
That was Cool Hand Luke when they came in and played. Yeah, face
so
the wall.
They faced the wall. So they sang with their backs to the audience, which was really interesting.
We still have a video. There's an old VHS video of Cool Hand Luke playing and us back in those days. We should try to.
Yeah.
Anybody who's got a VCR, let me know and we'll figure out how to play that someday.
Yeah, maybe edit it. I mean, move it over to digital.
Yeah, we should do that. We really should do that before the apocalypse comes. Yeah.
You can tell this actually meant a lot to us. And
it did.
Yeah, we enjoyed it. It probably helped keep us young for a while.
And then made us very old.
Yes, and then once we quit, we're like, oh, we're done. We're tired. Can't do it anymore. We had another funny thing happen actually not that long ago, too, when some visitors came to Eastgate.
This is a terrible story. This is one of the things that you wish you could go back and redo somehow. This is proof. We should call this segment proof that we don't know what we're doing.
Or like we need it.
Like as if we need proof.
That's the only thing. But we can provide it for you as needed. Yes, this was I think it was a whole family that came in and
was visiting with
you
us.
You can kind of tell the new people, they just kind of doe-eyed and they walk in and stop and look around, not quite sure where to go. And you know, we try to recognize.
And not sure what to make of that place
either.
Because it isn't what you'd call standard Baptist fare or anything like that.
Right. And so they came particularly quite early. The day that they came in, I think they met with Janelle first because they had several children that needed to get checked in.
Yes. Janelle came to me after the service and said, oh, I just had this terrible experience. There was a new couple who came in and they were trying to get their kids checked in. And it was one of those days where we've got a computer system that, you know, prints out labels for the kids and for the parents as well. And it was one of those days where something went crazy. And so she was trying to get it typed in and nothing was working right. And she was getting frustrated and distressed. And all of a sudden it started spitting out labels, like labels everywhere, like they're flying out of
it. It finally caught up with all the information she'd been trying to send it. And about the time they walked up trying to sign their kids in,
there's labels flying everywhere and she's screaming and
trying to look like she's in control. And I got this and we know what we're doing here.
So she's telling me that story. And I said, wait, what did they look like by any chance? And so she described them to me and I went, oh, no. Because that particular morning, one of the projectors, the lamp wasn't working. So I climbed up on a ladder with a screwdriver and I was trying to work on getting the lamp out of there or reposition. And I said, I think we got another lamp over in the office. And if you know anything about it, the big room is, you know, down a couple units down from the office.
You have to go outside and around.
Yeah,
to get
so you got to go outside. So I just started running towards the office and I bounded around the corner to where the hallway is that leads to the outside entrance. And I still had that screwdriver in my hand. And right as I turned the corner, here's this nice, happy little family with all of their kids. And I'm this wild man with a screwdriver coming around the corner. And they all just kind of got startled and back to the one side. And I stupidly just said, good morning. and just kept bounding past them and out through the door. So we've never seen them again. I don't understand it.
I have no idea why. I don't know why, too, then on mornings, sometimes when it rains, it pours. I mean, we'll come home sometimes.
Literally in that building.
Well, that's true. But that's much better now, by the way. But
thank you, Mike Baker.
Yes. But for whatever reason, when something goes wrong in one area, it tends to go wrong in another area and another area. And it's just something you can never predict. And it's anyway, that was just one of those mornings.
That was one of those days. And we've had plenty of them over the years. But anyway, if that couple ever hears this, which is very unlikely, because anytime they're probably traumatized every time somebody mentions the name Eastgate or something, they probably start twitching. But if they ever hear this, just we're sincerely sorry.
We're very sorry.
We're still waiting for the real pastor to show up to fix this mess.
But which reminds me, too, something that might tie all this together is occasionally Rob would play with a few guys from Eastgate at Javaluya. And I remember you guys came up with a song called Sorry Man.
Oh, yeah.
And that should be, maybe that should be our opening and ending song for this podcast. Man. Sorry.
Sorry.
Sorry, man. So speaking of Javaluya, I remember that I met a friend there, someone we've known for a long time and has volunteered at Eastgate for years and years.
A key volunteer.
Very much of a key volunteer that we wanted to highlight on this podcast. But that's Darby and Mike Brown. I think Mike came with her. But I remember I was working the counter and I was surprised because she's probably a little older than me and At the time, most of the people that were there were kids, you know, so she came up to the counter and I was immediately like, oh, who is this? Of somebody's parent here? Are we in trouble for something? And and she had a very serious look on her face. And if you know Darby, she's the sweetest lady you would ever meet. But she has a serious look when you first meet her, maybe. And at least I thought so. And I was just like, I remember myself consciously trying to stand up straight and look like I knew what I was doing. And I just said, what can I get you? What coffee would you like? Or something like that. And she very seriously looked at me and said, I'm really not interested in the coffee. I want to know about your church that meets here on Sunday morning.
She didn't actually say that meets here on Sunday morning. Wasn't she saying, I want to know about the church that sponsors this?
And she wanted
to know where we meet, and you waved your arm across the room.
Well, we actually meet here. And we did always clear all the chairs and tables out for Javaluya, so it probably looked weird, like, how does anybody meet here? Where do I sit? That's right. I forgot about that.
And that's way back. That's within a couple years of Eastgate starting. And Darby and Mike have been... Mike, of course, got involved with the sound system and soundboard. He's been one of the chief sound volunteers since we started. He's the one who's been pioneering the digital system that we got that we're still working on, trying to... But it's beautiful. But
it's
awesome. Darby, what I love about Darby... So it was right around 2000, 2001, wouldn't you say, when we moved from the Promenade Mall, from the small little building we had, we got over there to the Beachwalk Center. Mm-hmm. We were just in the coffee house side, just in the corner side.
Yeah.
And Darby, at that time, decided that she wanted to start making coffee for our morning services. And I think since then, so I'm saying 17 years.
Yeah.
Darby Brown goes in at 7:30 every morning, or thereabouts.
Sunday morning.
What did I say?
You said every morning. But
every morning. Every morning she's in there. And it's very sad because only Sundays is when people drink coffee. But no, every Sunday morning she's there. She's early. I'll thank her on a regular basis. I'll go up and say, Darby, thank you so much for doing this. And her response invariably is, thank you for letting me do this. Think of that.
Oof.
There's the heart of Christ in making coffee.
Yes.
Jesus shows up in unexpected places One of them is in Darby Brown as she's making coffee. And it smells wonderful when Jesus is around at that
point. That's right. And side note, she doesn't even drink coffee.
That's right.
And so she does ask people, taste testers, is it okay? Or, you know, does it need to be weaker or stronger? Let me know. And she'll make the adjustments as needed. But basically, she pretty much mans that counter. And it's not just the coffee. People that bring snacks, she'll set those out for everybody. And
in fact, she won't, so that there's going to be enough, she'll even take, if people bring in donuts or whatever, she'll take the time to cut them up into smaller portions so that everybody gets a little bit. That's how sweet and wonderful Darby is.
Yes, she is. And she'll, if there's like too many snacks for first service, she'll put some back and say, no, we'll put some of these out for second. I mean, she's got a real schedule going on, but it's she's wonderful. Very sweet. And so
when you're thinking about Eastgate and you think, man, I really like Eastgate. Eastgate is a really awesome place. Remember that the reason that it's awesome is because Darby Brown is there.
That's
and
right.
Mike Brown and so many other people
That's
who
right.
bring their amazing personalities and willingness to serve God into the mix. And how cool is that?
It's
it doesn't
so cool.
get any better than that.
All right. So one of the things we want to try to talk about as much as we can, as much as we can remember stuff, is something other people may not know about Eastgate that you and I sort of take for granted.
That's a great subject.
Yeah. So, like, what about the name? I've heard people ask you about how did we come up with the name Eastgate?
I don't know.
I don't either.
No.
Moving on.
We had to come up with a name. See, now, if I had my druthers, we would not have a name. We would just call it church.
That is so dumb.
No.
I'm sorry.
And if I could do it over, like, we could go by the church formerly known as Eastgate. And just have a logo. It would be the coolest thing.
Yeah. People would hate us just even more. I do. I'm angry right here.
Well, anyway, we had to come up with a name before the 501c3, right?
Yes. You had to have a legal name for that. And so the pressure was on because before that, it was just a home group. We didn't need any name.
We didn't need a name. We didn't need to affix
like
a name to this. We weren't hippies.
We're just like Bible hippies, in our front room, hanging out, having fun.
We were having fun. We're still having fun.
I think so.
Well, anyway, so we had to come up with a name. And so I sat down in my living room in a rocker one day and just was praying, just asking God. I didn't want to make a big deal about it, but I just didn't want to do something dumb. I didn't want anything religious sounding because I'd had enough of that. And of course, that trend is well played now.
Right.
In fact, now churches have really cool names to where you're not even sure what it is. Is it a furniture
Very well
store
hidden.
Or
That's
is it
right.
a church or
That's
what
right.
is it? But that trend hadn't started and I didn't know what to call it. And I was praying and it just seemed as though the Lord spoke to me and said the name Eastgate. And I was like, I didn't get it at all. I remember sitting,
you were in the front room and you were really God's man of faith and power and just believed everything you felt like he spoke
yeah.
to you.
Well, no. So you're being sarcastic, but that's okay because I can take that. but no, I didn't believe it. I still wonder, but I was like, well, what is E? I mean, right away I thought East, that sounds like Eastern religion or something. I don't want to give, you know, maybe I am weird or off track. But then all of a sudden, It dawned on me. It started kind of coming to my mind. The Eastern Gate. The Eastern Gate and the vision of Ezekiel 47, where he was forecasting, I believe he was forecasting for Israel, the return from exile back into the promised land, but also what that was going to entail, what God had in mind for the whole earth, which, of course, he didn't see it, but we realize now was a forecast of what the gospel would be. And there was a river flowing from the throne of God under the threshold, out through the eastern gate, and the river went out through the wilderness, and everything it touched came alive, and trees were growing on the banks, and the fruit was for food, and their leaves were for healing, and there were fishermen on either side of the bank drawing in everybody, and it said, as it went down into the sea, instead of being the way normal ocean, the normal water systems are, it becomes, you know, brackish and then salt water by the, in this the everything it touched became fresh water. So where it touched the ocean, it became fresh water. So it was a forecast of the gospel, but I suddenly realized that I liked that. I liked that idea.
This is a beautiful picture.
Something new, something fresh, something coming from the throne of God going out through the eastern gate. So,
and then what are the prophecies, though, for Jesus returning too? Isn't that in there somewhere?
Well, it's in Ezekiel as well. Glory of the Lord had departed from the temple, but the prophet also sees
the glory returning through the Eastern Gate. And that's oftentimes been significant for both Jewish people and the Christian church, the idea mm-hmm. that Jesus' return then comes through the Eastern Gate. And I don't know, I didn't check this out, but I think, didn't they put graveyards?
What they did is they put graveyards on either side of the wall because they know that a priest would be considered unholy if he walked unclean if he walked through a graveyard. So first they put it on one side and said, well, just to make sure, we better put it on both sides. But they not only did that, they walled up the Eastern Gate. It's completely walled up.
Fascinating.
Yeah. Huh. As if that would keep God out. And I think that's just hilarious.
I mean, wouldn't that be funny that Jesus returns and there's a graveyard? Nuts.
Dang it.
All right. Start again.
Wait, would he say dang it?
I don't know.
Well, it's not
That'd
really
be a fascinating thing to consider. He probably wouldn't. There's probably people right now aghast that we would even say that.
And
I'm sorry.
I hope this doesn't make anyone uncomfortable, but our background, at least in the crazy church a little bit, was a lot of, there was a lot of charismatic. It was a charismatic church. Mm-hmm. And so, honestly, at the beginning of Eastgate, there was a lot of, I feel like, dreams and visions and even some words that we felt like maybe were from the Lord at the beginning. And we look back on it now, and I remember one person said, I can't remember now who it was, and it doesn't matter. We think we even wrote it down because we had a recording, but that God would use Eastgate as a place of healing. That that verse that you were talking about earlier about the trees, mm-hmm. And I just remember, I think, crying when I first heard it and thinking, wow, that would just be awesome if that could ever happen. If that could ever just be a real thing.
Badly.
We needed it. We were still hurting, and the thought that we could maybe be an instrument of healing for other people too. I thought that was a pretty cool. I just remembered that as you were talking.
And we hope that that's been characteristic.
Yeah, yeah.
It certainly seems to be the case with many of the people that I know.
Yeah, and it's definitely one of our main goals.
It is
at Eastgate is to. There's a
Do
lot
no
of churches. There's just gonna say there's a lot of churches in Bay County. There's a lot of churches in the Panhandle, and we would never pretend to be the church for everybody, mm-hmm. but for the broken and the hurting and those who've been abused or damaged in any way, we get it. Been there.
It's not going to work for everybody. You know, God has a lot of different flavors to him.
That's right.
And not every flavor is going to appeal to everybody else. But mm-hmm. this is the flavor that he's provided for us to share with the world, the God flavor.
That's right.
And it's been helpful, I think.
That's good.
Hopefully.
Well, it has
Time will tell.
Hopefully it has for other people, but I can tell you from my side, it's been helpful to me.
Right on. Me too.
I think we both need it.
I don't know where I'd go to church, honestly.
I don't either.
Time and light and love is ours, the surf, the sun, the wind, oh, we'll live, we'll love, we'll swim, we'll dance, we'll surf forever, forever.
So now we're going to talk about some things about you and I, Robbie, some things that people may not know about either of us. Like, I can tell them about something that they wouldn't know about you right off the bat.
And I think I can tell them something about you, but it's not as easy because you're teaching every Sunday and you tell a lot of personal stories and people know a lot about you. And as I've thought about this throughout the month, I thought, oh, this is really hard. But I think I came up with something maybe most people don't know.
Okay, well, let me go first.
Okay.
Here's what I think that people would not know about you, and that is that you, when you were in college, hiked to the bottom of the Grand Canyon, swam in the Colorado River, and hiked all the way back up in one day.
Ta-da!
Ta-da! That's pretty impressive.
One of my claims to
really
fame.
Cool.
Yeah. I wish I saved the t-shirt. I literally bought a shirt after that said I hiked the canyon.
You
and I had that for
it.
A long time. I don't know what happened. I usually save things. But yeah,
Donald
I was
Miller
proud of that moment.
A whole book about doing something like that.
Yeah, see, I can't write. That's a problem.
I know, but I mean, just saying that for him, it was a big deal to where he had to write a whole book about the thing. You did this, and most people wouldn't even know that's something that was cool that you did.
I honestly say I loved it. I'm very proud of the fact that I did it. And actually, I got college credit for it too. It was a geology class. And so that was like part of it. I just
remember. That's so bogus. That's so wrong.
I know. It's so bad. I just remember skimming through all the courses at Saddleback Community College. And thinking, oh, yeah, I want to do this. I want to do this. I want to do this. And they were all basically glorified field trips. And my loving parents did pay for all of that for me.
That
so,
was nice.
Yeah, it was very nice.
Thank you, Joanne.
Yes. I think you've never mentioned this before, But you were a lead singer in a punk rock band. And other bands too, rock bands, but I think punk rock is...
That was the one that I liked the most. Wasn't as popular. The hard rock band, the prog rock band I was the lead singer for was more popular. People liked that one. Called King Cobra.
But you like the punk rock. But that's sort of you because you're sort of an iconoclast.
Prog rock, at least in the late 70s, was... We've already said this word, but pretentious. I mean, after a while, you know, 16-minute guitar solos. Come on. And what, you know, for a lead singer, what is he going
to
do?
That's right. He just has to stand there.
You know, isn't this cool? Yeah, I didn't like that. No, the punk rock was fun because that was high energy. And the name was dumb, and I was fighting that all the time. The bass player came up with the name Hard Road.
Hard Road, that's right.
But boy, that was fun. And we shut down some parties.
There you go. That's like the main goal.
You definitely arrived. Yeah.
Well,
or something.
And you love punk rock music, too. I know that was some of your favorite music. And you basically despised anything that was pop or close to pop. And
yeah, I used to be like that, didn't I?
Yeah, you're so different now. Yeah.
I'll grow out of it. One day I will grow out of it.
We still talk over that every now and then. Well, one of my favorite things to do with you, honestly, is to sit on our back porch and bring a boombox, and we each have our own phones.
A boombox?
What is it called?
Big boombox.
Big boom. I don't know.
I'm picturing something out of the 80s. But you're standing there with that bopping your shoulder, you know, bopping your head.
It's not that. What's it called?
Jambox.
Jambox, whatever. And so anyway, we each have our phones that are Bluetooth enabled, and it's like competing songs, but we take turns. Each of us playing a song. And
we play your song, and then we play something
my
good.
Song. See? That's so bad. But no, I enjoy doing that. And we each kind of learn new music and have to tolerate the other person's music a little bit.
It's
a fun time.
It is fun.
Daniel, our son Daniel and his wife Melissa told us about that. We did it one time in their garage while we were playing darts. And it was so much fun. But anyway, I digress. So what about stuff we've been watching lately? Anything you want to talk about that you've enjoyed? Or
well, last time we mentioned Bosch, didn't we?
Yes.
We'd listened
to a book on tape.
Okay.
Audiobook, whatever.
It's okay. No, it's hard to not say that, isn't it?
It is.
Everything is tape.
It is very hard, obviously.
But yes, but then we watched the third season of Bosch on Amazon,
mm-hmm.
and it was really good. And I just want to say, too, that I went to high school with one of the guys who's in that show. The guy that plays Sergeant Mankiewicz is Scott Clace. He was in a lot of the plays and stuff in high school. I remember I worked on the play The Miracle Worker, and he was one of the main characters in that. But anyway, it's cool. He plays in that show. I went to school with him.
Back in Columbus, Ohio?
In Ohio, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, Westerville, Ohio.
Yeah.
He's also famous for, if you're a Seinfeld fan, in the very last episode of Seinfeld, when they're all in the prison cell, the prison guard who comes up to escort them is my friend Scott.
Yeah, we've seen him. It was the first time we saw him in Seinfeld, and you went, whoa, that's the guy I know.
Yeah.
And we had to stop everything and look him up. But yeah, he's got a pretty significant role in this one. He's in almost every episode of Bosch.
And he's... you know, you can look him up on IMBD, or is that it? BD?
IMDb.
DB. I can never get that.
Database.
Right. Database. Anyway, you can look him up. He's been in a lot of things. And
the other thing we've been watching, and that was on Amazon Prime, I think, and on Netflix, we've been watching Luke Cage.
Luke Cage. We're trying to catch up with all the Marvel superhero shows.
Yes, one of the things that all of you probably already know about Rob is that he is a comic book artist and loves all things comic books. So pretty much any comic book movie that comes our way, we have to see it.
Well, it's our duty.
It is.
It's an obligation.
Yeah, it is something we have to do. I remember my sister saying one time, Madeline's like, oh, if I just see another movie with a man in tights, I don't know what I'm going to do. And I remember thinking, what, there's an option? You don't have to see those movies?
Yes. It shows how misguided your sister
is. Right. That's right. She's way off.
Anyway, but we've been watching Luke Cage. We've been enjoying it. I have to be honest that, you know, if you put the whole series, like, yeah, you've got Daredevil, you've got Iron Fist, you've got Jessica Jones. At first, Luke Cage was not on par with those. The writing was not
in my opinion, excellent on the first couple episodes, but
it was gaggable. I only watched one episode and I'm like, oh no, I can't do this. I can't do it. Anyway, I couldn't take it. And Rob watched a couple more episodes and he said, it's getting better. It's getting better. So we jumped in together again a few days ago.
We're really enjoying it now. It's actually
much
really
better.
So if you're a person who, you know, those kinds of things distress you or anything like that, get past the first couple episodes. It really does get a lot better. The storyline, this character is a lot more three-dimensional than you would expect. Honestly, at this point, I like it better than Iron Fist.
I liked Iron Fist.
It got goofy. I'm sorry, but Iron Fist got goofy for
me. It got a little goofy, but I think I don't know.
But there's trailers out now for the Defenders, which is going to put all those people together into one mega pack of delicious, awesome superhero.
Yes, we can't
wait. Yeah, whatever.
Hey, what's going on with the Cubs, Rob?
The Cubs have broken a 6-game losing streak. They've won 2 games now against the hated St. Louis Cardinals. It's wonderful.
Everyone rejoice.
And what happened today, Robbie?
Oh, one of my favorite things. A grand slam by one of my favorite players, if not my favorite player on the Cubs right now, Kyle Schwarber. I have a t-shirt with his name on it that I got for Christmas, and it's one of my favorite gifts. It's not quite as good as the gift of my grandchildren's picture frame, but it's really close. But anyway, this Kyle Schwarber hit a grand slam and it ended up being the game winning runs. And then they became 5-3 and it stayed that way till the rest of the game. And it was glorious. And it was Kyle Schwarber's first ever grand slam.
Grand slam. That's right. That's hard to believe. He had the storybook ending to, you know, last year he got injured early on in the whole season, missed the entire season until they made the World Series run. And he got cleared to play again one of the last games.
Yeah.
Not the last game.
I think he played a couple of games since the end of the World Series.
Came out and first time up to bat, knocked it out of the park. It was awesome.
It was beautiful. I just remember hearing on the news that he was cleared to play, and I think I heard the angel singing at that moment. It was a great moment.
He looks like Babe Ruth, too.
That's why I like him so much. He just reminds me of
a
young Babe Ruth, and he's not quite a rookie, but he's barely off his rookie year, and I'm excited for his future at the Cubs.
That's going to be awesome. And we got another baseball story, Robbie. You were talking to somebody at church there. Give me that whole lowdown.
Yes, I got his permission to share this story, but Del Schock from Eastgate, we were getting coffee together a couple Sundays ago, and he was wearing a black and white striped shirt, and I just had to say, I'm sorry, are you a White Sox fan? And it didn't have any numbers or name on it or anything. He said, oh, no, I just have this jersey. And then he said, actually, I'm a Cardinals fan. I went, oh, no. But he said, but my family are Cubs fans. Because, in fact, I had a relative that played for Chicago White Sox. And I said, whoa, tell me about it. And so he told me that his great uncle is Ray Schock, and he played for the Chicago Black Sox, which if any of you have seen
8 Men Out.
That's the story of the year that the Chicago White Sox threw the World Series, and he was their catcher for that team. And I went, what the heck? That is awesome. And so he went and sat down to start worship. And then my son Bradley came up next to me and I leaned over and had to tell him during the worship, this is really bad. I'm sorry, but I'm sorry.
The rest of us were
this
focused.
This is baseball. Calm down. Anyway, and so I leaned over and told him the story and my son dutifully looked it up on his phone and said, Mom, Ray Schock is a Hall of Famer. And I went, what? And so it's true. And it's awesome. His great uncle was a catcher for the Chicago White Sox. He was one of the few who was not indicted under the scandal where they threw the game. In fact, he hit 304 and it said he suspected that something was amiss when his pitchers kept crossing him up, whatever that means. I don't know. But he always refused to impugn his teammates publicly. And he later went on and worked as a player manager in the White Sox and then had a long career coaching minor leagues and with Purdue. But he was a member of the 1919 Black Sox Club, which
That's
is a
awesome.
Fascinating story in itself. But I feel like
if you ever see Dell or Star Schock, Star's his wife, go talk to him about, nobody's probably as obsessed about baseball as, well, I was going to say us, but I should say you.
But they should be.
But they should be.
It's baseball. If you have any comments or questions about marriage, theology, finance, we'd love to hear from you. Just drop us an email at eastgatepcb@gmail.com. Thanks.
So that's not a thing.
That's right. It's not a thing.
That is not a thing.
And this is where we talk about misquoted Bible verses.
Or verses or things that people assume are biblical quotes.
True.
That are actually not at all.
And a couple came to mind recently, and one of them is, heaven helps those who help themselves.
What? That's not in the Bible?
It's not.
It's not a thing. Of course it's not a thing. How about this one? Money is the root of all evil.
And that one's very close to the real deal. But it's not quite. And it's one of my pet peeves. So thanks for bringing it up, Rob.
Okay. Well, that's what I'm here for. That's why you dragged me over here to the kitchen table to record this thing.
What it actually says is the love of money is the root of all evil. That can be found in 1 Timothy 6:10. I'm kind of OCD. If you don't know that about me already, you should know it now.
That was the next thing I was going to try to give away. But of course,
okay, sorry.
I'm just kidding. No, everybody should know that.
Yes. But it's just one little word that's left out. And to me, it's super important.
It's very important. It changes the entire concept of the thing because money is a necessary evil in this world. It's not like money. Money is a neutral force.
That's right. Like, I think I've heard it worded like it's like a brick. A brick can be used to build a house or it can be used to injure somebody. And so the same thing with money. It's a neutral force, but it's what you do with it that's what matters. And
I just don't like the look you gave me when you said injure somebody. That was kind of disconcerting just for a moment there.
We'll skip on.
So the love of money is the root of all evil.
Yeah,
money's not evil, right?
That's right. It's not. God gave it to us as a tool. And I remember reading in a Vineyard magazine years ago. I will never forget it. It was all about money. And it said, strive to get to the place where money has no effect on your emotions for good or for bad. And that just struck me. And I thought that was how I lived every day. We lived hand to mouth all the time. We were always struggling to make ends meet, to get our bills paid and that kind of thing. And I just remember feeling like I would be elated when we had the money, when it came in. And you were a commercial artist, so we get paid sometimes once a month. I would be so happy when that money came in at the end of the month, and then it would be gone in a week or whatever. And then you just, you know, struggled for 3 weeks after that trying to make ends meet. And I thought, I want to be at that place one day. I want to be at that place where money doesn't affect me emotionally, either way, good or bad.
And one way that that's been accomplished in our lives is that Robbie has become, I always say, like a cult follower of Dave Ramsey. But no, it's not a cult following. It's not at all. It's actually very, very positive. It's had a very positive effect on our finances.
If it's a cult, it is the best cult ever. I just want to say that. I did discover Dave Ramsey a few years back. I'm thinking it was 3 or 4 years ago.
Something like that.
And I actually had heard of him sometime before, and I just didn't quite stick with me at the moment. But we started following his practices about that long ago. And in that time, we've become
debt-free.
That's right. We would do it.
I credit it all to Robbie. I would be living in a cardboard box somewhere if it weren't for my wife.
That's so sweet. He lets me manage it, and he's agreeable, and we've worked together to come to a good place with it. And we have something that we've never had in our lives before.
A savings account.
What the heck is that? We never knew.
I still don't know what it is. But I'm not allowed to touch the finances or look at them. So
you can ask me about it.
Yeah, but I'm not interested.
You
that's,
are.
That's my
that's
biggest
the nice
problem.
Thing. But I did want.
See, I call it a problem. You said it's a nice thing. So there we go. And that's how
me.
It works.
The artist versus the bookkeeper. That's sort of my trade, is being a bookkeeper. My dad is a CPA. My grandmother was a bookkeeper. It's just in the blood. My son is a finance
whatever
guy.
I don't understand what
I don't know. It's confusing, but his major was economics and then creative writing. Just a little bit of you, a little bit of me. But either way, it's just in the blood. And I'm fascinated by it and learning more about it all the time. But I was thinking that it might be helpful to people because Kevin and Stephanie and I had done we basically did a Dave Ramsey book club type of thing, the Total Money Makeover last year. And we were going to do it again this year. And about that time, we asked them if they'd be treasurers at Eastgate. And we all got really busy and didn't have time to do another class.
You think you guys will do that again, though?
I think we all want to. And so we're going to try to whenever it works out with everyone's schedule, which
would
probably be after summer.
Very beneficial to people. It's certainly, I mean, I'm not somebody who understands money and I don't understand numbers. So I'm kind of out of the equation altogether, but I can appreciate what it's done dynamically for us as a couple. Just, it's been amazing to me to be able to be more generous than we used to be. And that to me is worth every
every bit of it, every bit of the inconvenience that it might be to not just be able to pull a credit card out and do whatever you want to at the moment, but just to be able to be generous when the opportunity arises. To me, that just makes everything perfect.
It takes humility and it takes sacrifice and it takes learning how to do a budget and that kind of thing. So
all of which is all on your side of the whole thing.
Oh, it's so fun. It's just the best thing ever. I think, I don't know if this is always true, but often in marriage, there's one nerd and one free spirit. That's the way Dave Ramsey always words it. And Rob's definitely the free spirit. I'm the nerd. But at the same time, I think we've kind of learned and grown from each other's characteristics and we've kind of worked through that. I've tried to be a little like less uptight about some things. Do you believe that?
Yes.
And you've tried to be more organized about some things. And,
do you believe that?
I think your heart is in the right place. But either way, we worked together for a common goal.
Towels just earlier, hour ago. Who got in here? Who threw these towels in a wad? There's two of us living in the house.
I
had to blame it on somebody. I said the neighbor came over. He was in a rage.
And then he tried to pull the thing. I'm so busy. I'm like, this doesn't take more than a minute. Okay, we digress. But either way, I just want to encourage anybody who's going through money troubles that there is hope in sight and there is the ability to get past where you are right now. And we had a lot of debt. We had income, but we had debt. And they fought each other all the time. And there is something about getting a little more organized with your finances and being a little disciplined and learning how to tell yourself no, that can really help you move forward in a positive direction. And I had made this is my thing that I love. So everybody can do it differently, but I made a spreadsheet that listed all of our debts from smallest to largest. And every time we made a payment, we would try to put any extra money we had on the smallest. And then I would, you know, when it got paid off, I'd mark zero. And I just watched that sheet. I looked at that sheet every day, even though I was the one who input all the data. I just like, oh, this one's paid off. Oh, now we're on to the next one. Oh, man. Look. And I a couple times printed it and put it on the fridge.
I thought she was playing video games. She was so excited.
Know.
And then I realized, oh, it's a spreadsheet.
But Rob was very sweet and supportive. And it is really an awesome thing to be debt free and to have a savings account. The only debt we have is our mortgage. There is a ton of resources for free online at daveramsey.com and other places as well. But let me tell you this, if you want to get out of debt and move forward in a positive direction, one thing you can start trying to wrap your mind around is don't add to your debt starting now. And that's kind of hard. If you've learned to live on credit cards and if you're getting student loans or you're doing this or you're doing that, and it is a habit that is hard to break. I remember when we got married, we had no credit cards. Everything was just like at zero. And when we got our first credit card, we were just like elated. We're like, oh, we're legitimate. We get to go to Sears and charge something. And and it was like,
best, kids,
we're going to Sears. And so it was kind of an awesome thing. But learning to tell yourself no is very difficult, but it's also very adult. And it's a good practice to get into. So maybe you can start with that step. Don't add to your debt. Start with not adding to your debt.
Now, what would you say to somebody, though, that whose finances are like what ours were at one time in our lives, where we talk about trying to make ends meet? The ends didn't meet. Are we saying that somebody who doesn't have the money to get their groceries that they need to be able to feed their family shouldn't go into debt?
No. And all of that actually is covered on Dave Ramsey. He talks about, like, especially if you have irregular income, it's hard to know how to prioritize what you pay. And he talks about on there how to set up a budget that way. You prioritize. You put the first things first that you have to put. Like, okay, we have to eat. Mm-hmm. That's one of the first things. How much money do we need to eat? And you have to start thinking about that. And a lot of times you can just go back and look at what have we been spending on groceries? What have we been doing? And what can we get away with, you know, spending on groceries?
And I think that in itself becomes revelatory because a lot of times we spend and we don't think about it.
We don't.
Especially with plastic in our pockets. We don't even think about what we're doing. We just do it. And when you go back and begin to actually analyze and look at what's there, you and I, that was an eye-opening realization that, wait a minute, we bought that. We didn't need that. That was, you know.
That's right.
It seemed like the right thing at the moment, but we actually didn't have to do that at that moment.
And there are a lot of studies that say when you use a credit card and even a debit card that you tend to spend, there's a percentage like 10 to 20% more than you would if you had cash in your hand. And so that's another thing. It's a mental fight that you have to go through where you're like, oh, if I have cash, I got to count. what I'm spending right here at the grocery store. And but if it's on a credit card, oh, I'll go ahead and get that because I know I have that much money left in my available credit or mm-hmm. whatever. And so that was actually something that ended up being very helpful to you, I know, because we transferred from debit card and some credit card to strictly cash.
Yeah. And for me, to have cash suddenly made money real again. Because money was never real to me when it was plastic.
It made a lot of sense. And I remember you coming to me saying, can I get this? Is it okay if we spend this? And I'd be like, I don't know. Let me go to my bookkeeping and look. But I wouldn't always know at a moment's notice where we were financially. I would just be like, oh, okay, yeah, I think you can, but only do this much. And well, that's not very practical on a day-to-day living basis. You know, right. Hey, we need this for our house. Can we get it today or can we not? But when we went to cash and we figured out, okay, here's what I think we can get away. We get paid every 2 weeks. And I'd give you the cash. You manage cash for a couple of items. I manage cash for a couple of different items. So you think you just look in your wallet and say, hey, I've got this much money left over, so now I know.
I can do this or I can't do this or whatever. So
exactly.
Yeah, it's been very beneficial for us. I really have appreciated what's happened in our financial sphere.
Yeah.
Realm.
Well, and one of the things...
I like financial realm because it sounds like a castle somewhere.
It does.
Dungeons
fantasy
and
world.
Dragons. Go ahead.
Well, Dave Ramsey, a lot of his phrases come back to financial peace. And honestly, that's what it's all about.
Absolutely.
Just having financial peace. Don't let money control you. It shouldn't. It should never control you. God gave it to us as a tool. Let's use it and let's move on.
So one of the things that we want to do is a notable quote.
So do you have a good quote today, Rob?
I do. I actually do. You know me, I'm a big fan of Eugene Peterson. He's the guy that wrote The Message.
He's awesome.
Yeah, he is. And he's written some wonderful books. But I'm not sure what this book comes from. It's not listed in the quote that I came across, but I thought it was so good. And it says, his quote is, speaking to people does not have the same personal intensity as listening to them. The question I put to myself is not, how many people have you spoken to about Christ this week, but how many people have you listened to in Christ this week?
Mm. That's really good. And I bet that really hits home with you as a pastor.
It does.
Because you have to say so many words.
And it's something I'm constantly having to remind myself that my role is not to try to, especially as I'm coming alongside someone to talk with them about life or things that are going on. My role is not to sit there and hand out the information packet that they need to try to. My role, first and foremost, is to listen. Listen in Christ. I really like that. All of us actually could do that more. All of us could pay attention more to what's happening in each other's lives. In fact, that would actually lead me into a marriage advice.
That would be good.
Yeah. One of the things that we wanted to do on this podcast is talk about different things as it pertains to marriage. And that one right there, what Eugene Peterson says there is very applicable to marriage as well. Because one of the things that I've noticed that in people's relationships that we tend to do as human beings is we tend to not really listen to each other. Mm-hmm. Communication is key. Now, of course, Homer Simpson has a wonderful quote.
Everybody's marriage is falling apart except ours. See, the problem's communication. Too much communication.
But it's obviously the opposite of that. We need to communicate more, but not just communicate. It's not just the ability to tell somebody what it is that you think or what's going on, but it's the willingness to listen to what's there. Because what happens to couples all the time is that if we're not communicating or if we're not really listening, we start assigning motives to each other. Like if we don't talk about something, Robbie does something to me or
says something
or says something that I internally react to, like, whoa, why would she say something like that? And if I don't talk to her about it, if I don't listen to her and find out what was behind that, then automatically my mind starts conjuring up all the potential motives that could be behind that. And little by little, without even realizing it, I start devising a straw man. I start putting a straw man together, somebody who's not really her, but someone that I think she might be. She could be this person with these motives. And if I don't discuss that with her, if I don't bring that out, if we don't listen to each other, then without even realizing it, I'm going to start interacting with the straw man. Mm. I'm going to be talking to her based on the motives that I think she has. I'm going to be reacting to things that I think she's thinking or intending that may or may not be true.
Yeah, that comes back to me all the time. And I think it's super important. And you sometimes have to kind of deconstruct what you've just built up in your mind, because mm-hmm. it happens without you even realizing it.
It happens so often. We'll say things and not realize how it is we may be coming across. And mm-hmm. that's both males and females are capable of doing this, saying things without recognizing or realizing what type of tone it might carry with it. And so it's important for us to be willing to listen to each other, to ask questions, mm-hmm. not make assumptions, not start constructing a straw man. Because the moment we start constructing the straw man, like Robbie said, it's going to be difficult to deconstruct him. It's going to be difficult to take that apart and give up what we've assumed are motives and motivations there.
Because honestly, the ego, we think we're real smart. We think we know. When we see that happen or whatever, oh, I know what he means by that. Or I know what she means by that. That's very obvious to me. Well, that may or may not be true. And there's nothing wrong with asking the other person. In fact, there's everything right about it.
Absolutely. Well, I think that's going to be about it for this podcast, Robbie. I think we bored these people long enough. The two people that are listening, probably right. family members.
That's right. Agreed.
So we'll just keep on doing what we're doing, learning how to love God, learning how to love others.
This is our story so far.